Fantasy and the Bible. This is Dr. Herbert O'Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with Bible Stories. Fantasy and the Bible. Well, now, who wants to make fantasy and the Bible? Well, the Bible is the story of the religious development of a people, of a people. That's the Hebrew nation. And since we are all Hebrew, then that's the development of our nation. And since we are all one, then that's the development of our nation. But it is the story of the development of a people and how they came to spiritual conclusions and how they found an inner wisdom and an inner joy. But we are so fantasized by our scientists. Our scientists can say virtually anything. Oh, the scientists say that. And we believe it. So the prophets said many things that came to their mind, that came to their understanding, and the people believed it because the prophets said it. And we believe it because the scientists say it. And the Big Bang Theory has become so prevalent, people don't think of it as a theory. They think of it as gospel. The Big Bang Gospel. Now, we haven't heard that yet, but it's in the back of people's minds because science said it, it must be so. And the Christians say, if Jesus said it, it must be so. If Jesus said it, I believe it, you know. And that's not too bad. But think about these things. Think about fantasy and the Bible. If the Big Bang Theory is just a theory in a scientist's mind, based upon facts and based upon observations and revelations and so forth, what about all the stories in the Bible? Now, the stories in the Bible are not bad, but are they real? Well, does it matter if they're real? Because what they are is a tale that a father tells his child to help the child gain an understanding of the world and gain an understanding of values and gain an understanding of direction in his life. And this is truly what the Bible is. The Bible is the story of how different matriarchal beings, father beings, male beings, have manipulated and controlled the tribes and the people, like the tribes of Israel and the many nationalities that were throughout the Holy Land, you know. It's very interesting, very fascinating. But really, do you believe? Do you really believe? And you can, if there's nothing wrong with it. But do you really believe there is a Tower of Babel? That they were building this tower up to heaven so that they could, you know, be one with God? That they could really go up there? And, you know, how high did they go? How high did they go? And we talk about the armies of Israel. We talk about the armies of these different countries. How many people were in there? 20, 30, 50, 100, 1,000? They say the thousands marched in, you know. Well, that's an exaggeration. If you, like our little boy, he says, Mommy, Mommy, the kids are chasing me. There's a million of them out there, you know. And Mommy knows very well there's not a million. But she knows that her son is frightened. And she knows that something has frightened him. And the best way to take care of something that frightens you is to go out and face it. Well, every time the peoples of the Bible, every time the nations of the Bible, the people written about in the Bible, were facing a problem, their prophet, their leader, their king, whoever it may have been, the matriarch of their being, their community, would go out and face the dilemma and put it to rest. Now, you remember the story about Daniel in the lion's den? You remember the story about David and his slingshot? Remember? Mm-hmm. Here, the king was facing an intolerable foe, the Philistines. And the Philistines had a big war machine amongst them. Remember what that war machine was?
Yep.
What was it?
Goliath.
It was a giant.
A giant, yeah.
Yeah, the name's okay too, but it was a giant. He was a giant man. He was bigger than these people could ever imagine. Now, he really wasn't as big as they say he was. He probably was 7-8 feet tall, which is pretty good size, you know, but not nonetheless not unreasonable. So, but the people were frightened of this monstrosity. And they thought, that's terrible, that's unusual, that's not normal. He must have great powers. So they invested him with powers that he didn't have. He was just a big man. And so David came along, and he said, King, I will help you. Now, do you think David really came along and said to the king, I'll help you, and that the king let him do it? Why not? You know, good story. And whoever wrote it, whoever created it, has a real good imagination. And they also put in all the little side parts of it. And then, in doing this, the story became tradition. It became history. It became a legend. It became something that, that the people believed in. Now, this was all done before the days of Jesus. And before the days of Jesus, all these stories were given by word of mouth. They were memorized by the scribes, and they were memorized by the rabbis. They were memorized. That's why when we hear about the Buddhists, we hear about the Brahmin, we hear about the Hindus, and what do we hear about them? The great wise Buddhists, the great wise men, were those who had memorized all the stories of their ancient history. They could tell the story of the... That's the only way they had it. They didn't write it down because they had really no ability to do that yet. They had the verbal ability, but they didn't have the intellectual skills to do that. So, and then in any event, along comes Jesus, and a real cool guy, and he did his thing, and people said, hey, that's all right, you know. And the Jews didn't want to recognize that he was a Jew himself. He was a rabbi. He was a Jewish priest. And the stories abound about him. Now, it came some 50 years later or more after he had ascended that the story of his experiences were written down. And the people, of course, were changed to fit the thing, and the stories were known by everybody. These were stories that were told by the people, and they were folk tales, and so there was a continuity in the story between the various writers of the various books of the New Testament. You understand that? Okay, now, that doesn't make him wrong, that doesn't make him right, but it just confirms the idea that these are creative minds, imaginative minds, that are writing these stories and doing a very excellent job of it. Now, there's a book on the market, and it's a book that tells about the writings at the time of, following the time of Jesus. It's following the time of Jesus, yeah. And what these writings were. Well, now the book, we have a copy here. The book is most terrible. Absolutely terrible, terrible, terrible. You look at that book and you think to yourself, how could they do that? How could they understand that? How could they really know what's going on? Here's what happened. You think the Germans are bad. Ha! Well, they had no periods. They had no capital letters, and they had no spaces between the words. Now, if you don't think that is a chore to read something like that, I mean, you really have to. And then there were only a few people who could read. The scribes were not people who could read. They merely were people who could sign their name on a document acknowledging that they received it. Not that they read it, not that they understood it, not that it meant anything to them, but they received it. Now, you see, we have these strange ideas in our mind that the people who lived in those days had the same literary talents that we have. Well, they didn't have that gift. They had the gift, but they didn't have the development of it. And so, all of their writings were like that. All of their writings for years and years and years. I didn't hear when they started using periods and commas and spaces between words and spaces between sentences and paragraphs, you know. But it was just one long run-on sentence, just line after line after line. You should see it. We should haul that book out. It's very fascinating. And what it does, it tells us that it's very easy to make a mistake. Because in the first place, you have to know what the person was talking about. And second place, you have to know what the idioms and the language was at that time and how the people had phrases and they said things and how the idioms meant one thing, whereas it might sound like another. Like, go jump in the lake. It doesn't mean you should go jump in the lake. It means that that's incredulous. I don't believe that, what you're saying, you know. And so it's a totally opposite, totally different from jump in the lake, which means to go and get wet, you know, or what, swim and what have you. And the other means, I do not believe what you're saying. What you are telling me is, to me, unbelievable. And many other aspects that you could say for a phrase like that. When that is written into the Bible, and it certainly is written into the early scriptures, what happens? Who is going to interpret it? You take the Jews, they interpret it one way. You take the other people, the Sumerians, you take the people from other cultures surrounding there who might have access to it. Now, what was it that made the Bible, that made, I don't want to say the Bible, what was it that made the teachings of Jesus so long-lasting? What gave them the continuity of life? What gave them the opportunity to continue? The people lived what they were told by their sharers, their teachers, people who, so to speak, knew Jesus, you know, who knew what he was saying. Now, what were the teachings? What were the Ten Commandments? How to live? What were the teachings of Jesus, you know, when he spoke? What did he do? The Sermon on the Mount? Sermon on the Mount, oh, that sounds so tremendous. What was it? It's a bunch of stories. It was stories about how to live your life in a noble, beautiful way. Now, Jesus was no more than a matriarch to the people of the Bible, because he was guiding them and leading them by his own inner wisdom. Just not a bad thing, you know. And this is what he did. Well, this is what every other matriarch did. Every other president of any country or any other leader of any country. Any other person who led their people. Muhammad, Buddha, you know, Zarathustra. You name them. They're legends. Now, did they say the things that we attribute to them? Did they say the things that are written down in books? Did they say the things that they were quoted as having said? Well, that's what they should have said. And so the writer writes down what they should have said. And the writer writes down what they should have said based upon how the Zarathustrians act. How do the Zarathustrians live their life? Now, this is the indication of the teachings of Zarathustra. How do the Christians live their life? That is an indication of the teachings of Jesus. And, of course, the difficulty again comes along where people interpret what he said, and they say, well, really, in Hebrew times, in Arabic writing times, these things meant this, you know? And the reason he said, would a father give his son or his family a stone if they asked for bread? Or a serpent if they asked for a fish? Well, the story is so obvious from that time. They lived in primitive houses, and from the rafters they hung their fish to dry. And many times there were friendly serpents up there that ate the bugs and what have you. And in the darkness, he would reach up to grab a fish and pull down a serpent. Now, and then he'd go out in front of the house where there was a pile of stones. And this pile of stones in the desert sun gets quite hot. And so they put their unleavened bread on that stone, or even the leavened bread, and it looks like a stone. The bread looks like a stone. And so you go out and bring in this heavy stone, and you think it's some bread. And it's a stone, because you pick up the wrong one. And it's not that you do it on purpose. You do it because you didn't check it. You didn't stick your finger into the stone, make sure it was bread. Or you didn't check the fish to make sure it wasn't wiggly. But these are just things that that go along with it, you know. And many other tales, it's easier for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of heaven than it is as easy for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven as it is for a camel to go through the needle's eye. Now, what's the needle's eye? The needle's eye is the side entrances of the city. The side entrances of the city, these little gates, are for the people in the city to go out and work in the fields and come back. And they could carry their tools and they could do, but they couldn't take a camel through there, because the camel had to come through the front entrance and be taxed, because it was bringing in merchandise to sell to the citizens. But if a camel tried to go through the side entrance, it was like a needle's eye, you know, in that sort of a design, and it would knock the luggage right off the back of the camel. He couldn't get through. So that's what it means. Now people say, oh, my goodness, well, why didn't he just say that? Well, because that was in their time. That was knowledgeable. That was something that was very understandable. People had no trouble believing that and understanding it. Now, you see, this is what we do. We look at these things and we think, just because the prophets have said it, it's gospel. Just because Jesus is supposed to have said these things, it's gospel. And we look at the scientists, and because they tell us the Big Bang Theory, or they tell us that there are certain things going to happen because they see certain activities going on in the heavens, and they know that certain things follow those activities. Well, maybe, maybe not, you know. And Einstein wrote about it. He wrote his many theories, theory of relativity and so forth, and he wrote all these different theories, and people said, "Wow, boy, you were really off your rocker." And then later they found out that he was very much on his rocker, that it was true. But it had to have its time of evolvement and its time of revelation to prove what he had said. Now, the Bible, we say 2,000 years, that's just because of the Christian aspect of it, but we place our teachings on the entire Bible. We place our teachings on the entire philosophy of the Bible. And the philosophy of the Bible is a Hebrew book of teachings, and a very fine book of teachings. And the Bible is also the story of the religious development of those people. It told about their matriarchs, it told about the people who guided them into the wisdom, just like their kings were merely the head of their community. And sometimes they had very big communities, and they became good big kings, like King Solomon. And King Solomon was just an ordinary man, an ordinary matriarch, a rather responsible matriarch. He was gathering in much money and much gold and much tribute from nations over which he lorded. And he had wisdom. So when the two women came to him and said, both of them, that this is their child, and neither would renege, he said, okay, Axman, come, we'll split the child in two and give him each half. And the real mother spoke up and said, no, 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 no. Let her have my child. I'd rather see him alive, you know. And you see, wisdom. Wisdom comes in a most subtle yet very definite way when you listen within. And that's what Solomon was teaching us to do. And that's what Daniel was teaching us to do when he went in the lion's den. He ended up boring the lions to death with the story of his life, and loving them and petting them, and the lions became his very good friends. By the time he's ready to get out of the lion's den, he and the lions were sitting there having a good chat, and he was all snuggly in the lion's body is around him, real happy. But who thinks of that? Oh, no, no, that's what the story is. You tell me the story of the Bible is a lie? Okay, if it's not a lie, then it's a very good story. A very good story. And why not? And why not? You see, you and I have the privilege of being in a fantasy, of dream our wildest dreams, and we can watch it come true. Just as the Bible is the wildest dream of the people at the time, and much of it came true, perhaps even more than we know, because these people were listening within and following the fantasy within themselves, following the imagination within themselves. And in following that imagination, what did they do? They brought forth something so spectacular, something so marvelous. It's like a father speaking to his children. He guides them rightly. He doesn't guide them wrongly. Oh, he may be feeling that his family is better than anybody else's family, but of course, what parent doesn't feel that way? And the mother, does she play a very wise role? Some women in history, in the Bible times, were rather outstanding. And whose family name is it? Whose name is it that's perpetuated by the Jewish Hebrew families? The mother. It's by the mother. Fascinating. But think on these things. Let your fantasy soar. Let your imagination soar. Because that's what life is made up of. That's what the world is made up of. And that's what wisdom, knowledge, and goodness are made up of. Life's a lot of fun. The Bible and fantasy, they're one. You and fantasy are one. Fantasize, my beloveds. I love you, I love you, I love you.
I love you.